नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4, द क्रिएशन ऑफ द फोर्थ ऑर्डर, चैप्टर 25, द डिस्क्रिप्शंस ऑफ द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ किंग पुरंजना, पार्ट 4, वर्सेस 26 थ्रू 42. गुरु मुख पद्म वाक्य.
The first aphorism in the Vedanta Sutra is Athato Brahma Jigyasa. In the human form of life, one should put many questions to oneself and to one's intelligence. In the various forms of life lower than human life, the intelligence does not go beyond the range of life's primary necessities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Dogs, cats, and tigers are always busy trying to find something to eat or a place to sleep, trying to defend and have sexual intercourse successfully. However, in the human form of life, one should be intelligent enough to ask what one is, why one has come into this world. What is one's duty? Who is the supreme controller? What is the difference between dull matter and the living entity, etc.? There are so many questions, and the person who is actually intelligent should simply inquire about the supreme source of everything, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. A living entity is always connected with a certain amount of intelligence. But in the human form of life, the living entity must inquire about his or her spiritual identity. This is real human intelligence. And it is said that one who is simply conscious of the body is no better than an animal, even though one may be in the human form. In the animal form, the living entity is completely forgetful of one's relationship with God. This is called apohanam, forgetfulness. In the human form of life, however, consciousness is more greatly developed, and consequently, the human being has a chance to understand his or her relationship with God. In the human form, one should utilize the intelligence by asking all these questions, just as Puranjana, the living entity, is asking the unknown girl where she has come from, what her business is, why she is present, etc. These are inquiries about Atma Tattva, self-realization. The conclusion is that unless a living entity is inquisitive about self-realization, he or she is nothing but an animal. The 11 strong servants of the mind are the 5 working senses and the 5 knowledge-gathering senses. All these 10 senses work under the aegis or kind endorsement and guidance of the mind. The mind and the 10 senses combine to become 11 strong bodyguards. The hundreds of women under the jurisdiction of the senses are addressed here as Lalana. The mind works under the intelligence, and under the mind are the 10 senses, and under the 10 senses are innumerable desires to be fulfilled. All these, however, depend on the vital force, which is here represented by the snake. As long as the vital force is there, the mind works, and under the mind the senses work, and the senses give rise to so many material desires. Actually, the living entity, known as Puranjana, is embarrassed by so much paraphernalia, all this paraphernalia simply constitutes different sources of anxiety. But one who is surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who leaves all business to Krishna is freed from such anxieties. Everyone thinks that his or her intelligence is perfect. The living entity who is bewildered does not know how to employ one's intelligence. Intelligence should be employed in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as one uses his or her intelligence in this way, the Goddess of Fortune automatically becomes favorable to one. Lakshmi, the Goddess of Fortune, never remains without her husband, Lord Vishnu. Consequently, when one worships Lord Vishnu, he or she automatically obtains the favor of the Goddess of Fortune. One should not, like Ravana, worship the Goddess of Fortune alone, for Lakshmi cannot remain long without her husband. Thus, Lakshmi Ji's other name is Chanchala, restless. It is clear that Puranjana is representing materialistic intelligence while he is talking with the girl. Puranjana not only appreciated the shyness of the girl, but was actually becoming more and more attracted by that shyness. Puranjana was actually thinking of becoming her husband, and consequently was asking her whether she was thinking of her prospective husband or whether she was already married. This is an example of bhoga ichcha, the desire for enjoyment. One who is attracted by such desires becomes conditioned in this material world, and one who is not so attracted attains liberation. The material world cannot be enjoyed by any living entity. If one so desires to enjoy it, immediately one becomes a demon like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, or Kamsa. Because Ravana wanted to enjoy the Goddess of Fortune, Sita Devi, Ravana was vanquished along with his entire family, wealth, and opulence. However, one can enjoy that Maya bestowed upon the living entity by Lord Vishnu. The satisfaction of one's senses and desires means enjoying Maya, not the Goddess of Fortune. So, there is a difference between demoniac mentality and devotional mentality. Devotees know perfectly well that the Goddess of Fortune, who is the constant companion of Vishnu or Narayana, cannot be enjoyed by the living entity. This higher sense of understanding is called Krishna consciousness. Nonetheless, everyone wants to become happy by imitating the prosperity of Narayana. To desire to enjoy this material world as a subordinate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is godly. The demons, however, want to enjoy this material world without considering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the difference between a demon and a demigod. The word bhuvisprik is very significant. When the demigods sometimes come to this planet, they do not touch the ground. Since every woman in this world wants her husband to be very influential, rich, and powerful, Puranjan, in order to seduce the girl, introduced himself as such a personality. In this material world, whether one be a man or a woman, one wants to enjoy. A man wants to enjoy a beautiful woman, and a woman wants to enjoy a powerful, opulent man. Every living entity who possesses such material desires is called Purusha, and enjoyer. Superficially, it appears that the woman is the enjoyed and the man is the enjoyer. But internally, everyone is an enjoyer. Consequently, everything in this material world is called Maya. Everyone has lusty desires within, and as soon as one is agitated by the movement of a beautiful woman's eyebrows, the Cupid within immediately throws his arrow at the heart. Thus, one is quickly conquered by the eyebrows of a beautiful woman. When one is agitated by lusty desires, one's senses are attracted by all kinds of vishaya, enjoyable things, like sound, touch, form, smell, and taste. These attractive sense objects oblige one to come under the control of a woman. In this way, the conditional life of a living entity begins. Conditional life means being under the control of a woman. And certainly, the living entity is always at the mercy of a woman or man. Thus, living entities live in bondage to one another. And in this way, they continue their conditional material life, illusioned by Maya. This story of Puranjana demonstrates what is called bewilderment occasioned by becoming conditioned by material nature. When thus attracted by the beauty of the material energy, one becomes very eager to enjoy. In conditional life, the living entity is attracted by a face, eyebrows or eyes, or a voice, or anything. In short, everything becomes attractive. When a man or woman is attracted by the opposite sex, it does not matter whether the opposite sex is beautiful or not. The lover sees everything beautiful in the face of the beloved and thus becomes attracted. This attraction causes the living entity to fall down into this material world. Ichcha dvesha samutpena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sargi yanti parantapa. O scion of Bharata Arjuna, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. This condition of life is called avidya, and opposed to this avidya is real knowledge. Sri Ishopanishad distinguishes between vidya and avidya, knowledge and ignorance. By avidya, ignorance, one becomes conditioned, and by vidya, or knowledge, one becomes liberated. Puranjana admits herein that he is attracted by avidya. Now, Puranjan wishes to see the complete feature of avidya, and so he requests the girl to raise her head so that he can see her face to face. Puranjana thus wishes to see the various features that make avidya or ignorance attractive. So by this incident, we can understand that when a man is aggressive and begins to woo a woman, the woman becomes attracted to the man. This process is described in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Rishabhadev. Pungsa Striya Maituni Bhavam Etam. This attraction is enacted on the platform of sexual life. Thus, the sex impulse is the platform of material engagement. This conditional life, the platform of material sense enjoyment, is the cause of forgetfulness of spiritual life. In this way, a living entity's original Krishna consciousness becomes covered or converted into material consciousness. Thus, one engages in the business of sense gratification. The living entity is ignorant of his or her origin. One does not know why this material world was created, why others are working in this material world, and what the ultimate source of this manifestation is. No one knows the answers to these questions, and this is called ignorance. The phrase Brahma Jigyasa is used to indicate an inquisitiveness to know the original source of our existence in this material world. No philosopher, scientist, or politician actually knows where from we have come, why we are here struggling so hard just for existence, and where we will go next. Generally, people are of the opinion that we are all here accidentally, and that as soon as these bodies are finished, all of our dramatic activities will become finished, and we ourselves will become zero. Such scientists and philosophers are only impersonalists and voidists. In this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the girl is expressing the actual position of the living entity. She cannot tell Puranjana her father's name because she does not know from where she has come, nor does she know why she is present in that place. She frankly says that she does not know anything about this. This is the position of the living entity in the material world. In this material world, we have many nice facilities for living, but we are so foolish that we do not ask who has made this world habitable for us and has arranged it so nicely. Everything is functioning in order, but people foolishly think that they are produced by chance in this material world, and that after death they will become zero. They think that this beautiful place of habitation will automatically remain. Lack of Krishna consciousness is called ignorance. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Rishabhadev says, Parabhavastavad abodha jata. Everyone is born ignorant. The Bhagavatam therefore says that we are all born ignorant within this material world, and in our ignorance we may create nationalism, philanthropy, internationalism, science, philosophy, and so many other things. The basic principle behind all these is ignorance. What then is the value of all this advancement of knowledge if the basic principle is ignorance? Unless a person comes to Krishna consciousness, all of one's activities are defeated. This human form of life is especially meant to dissipate ignorance. But without understanding how to dissipate ignorance, people are planning and building many things. After death, however, all of this is finished. The snake is the vital force of the living being. This vital force always remains awake. Even when the body and the senses become fatigued and do not work, even in the state of unconsciousness, when we sleep, the snake or the life force remains intact and awake. Consequently, we dream while we sleep. When the living entity gives up this material body, the vital force still remains intact and is carried to another material body. This is called transmigration or change of the body. And we have come to know this process as death. Actually, there is no death, for the vital force always exists with the soul. And when the soul is awakened from so-called sleep, he or she can see one's 11 friends, or the active senses and the mind, along with their various wives or desires. The vital force remains even during our sleeping hours. We can understand, by virtue of our breathing process, that the snake lives by eating the air which passes within this body. Air is exhibited in the form of breathing, and as long as breath is there, one can understand that a sleeping person is alive. Even when the gross body is asleep, the vital force remains active and alive to protect the body. Thus, the snake is described as living and eating air to keep the body fit for life. The living entity comes down into this material world for sense gratification, and one's intelligence, represented by the woman, gives the proper direction by which one can satisfy his or her senses to their best capacity. In actuality, however, intelligence comes from the Supersoul, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna gives full facility to the living entity who has come down to this material world. King Puranjana represents the ordinary living entity, and the woman represents the ordinary living entity's intelligence. Combined, the living entity enjoys one's material senses, and the intelligence supplies all paraphernalia for one's enjoyment. As soon as one enters the human form, the living entity is entrapped by family tradition, nationality, customs, etc. All of these are supplied by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the living entity, under the bodily conception of life, utilizes his or her intelligence to one's best capacity in order to satisfy one's senses. Dharmartha kama mokshanam dara samprapti hetavaha. The wife is the cause of all kinds of success in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately salvation. When one accepts a wife, it is to be understood that he is being helped in his progressive march towards liberation. In the beginning of life, a person is trained as brahmachari and is then allowed to marry a suitable girl and become a householder. If one is thoroughly trained in household life, one finds all facilities for human life, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Everything is there if it is executed according to regulative principles. Since there are 8,400,000 species of life, there are also many different living conditions. In the lower grades of life, such as in plant and tree life, there is no system for sexual intercourse. In the upper grades, namely in the life of birds and bees, there is sex. But the insects and animals do not know how to actually enjoy sex life. However, in the human form of life, there is full knowledge of how to enjoy sex. Indeed, there are many so-called philosophers who give directions on how to enjoy sex life. Why, there is even a science called Kama Shastra, which is the science of sex. The Karmis do not practice brahmacharya, vanaprastha, or sannyas life, for they are very much interested in grihastha life. In other words, a human being is very much materially inclined. Indeed, all living entities are materially inclined. They prefer grihastha life because there is a concession for sex. The Karmis think that the other statuses of life are worse than animal life. For animals also have sex, whereas the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi completely give up sex. The Karmis therefore abhor these three orders of spiritual life. According to Vedic instructions, there are two paths for human activities. One is called Pravritti Marga, and the other is called Nivritti Marga. The basic principle for either of these paths is religious life. In animal life, there is only Pravritti Marga. Pravritti Marga means sense enjoyment, and Nivritti Marga means spiritual advancement. In the life of animals and demons, there is no conception of Nivritti Marga, nor is there any actual conception of Pravritti Marga. Pravritti Marga maintains that even though one has the propensity for sense gratification, one may gratify his or her senses only according to the directions of the Vedic injunctions. Everyone has the propensity for sex life, but in demoniac civilization, sex is enjoyed without restriction. According to Vedic culture, sex is enjoyed under Vedic instructions. Thus, the Vedas give direction to civilized human beings just to enable them to satisfy their propensities for sense gratification. In the Nivritti Marga, however, on the path of transcendental realization, sex is completely forbidden. The social orders are divided into four parts: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa. And only in the householder life can the Pravritti Marg be encouraged or accepted. According to Vedic instructions, in the orders of brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas, there are no facilities for sex. In this episode, the woman is advocating Pravritti Marg only, and is discouraging the path of Nivritti Marga. She clearly says that the Yatis, the transcendentalists, who are concerned only with Kaivalya, spiritual life, cannot imagine the happiness of Pravritti Marga. In other words, the man who follows the Vedic principles enjoys the materialistic way of life, not only by becoming happy in this life, but also in the next life, by being promoted to the heavenly planets. in this life. Such a person gets all kinds of material opulences, such as sons and grandsons, because one is always engaged in various religious functions. The material distresses are birth, old age, disease, and death. But those who are interested in pravritti marga hold various religious functions at the time of birth, old age, disease, and death. Without caring for the distresses of birth, old age, disease, and death, the karmis are addicted to performing the special functions according to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Factually, however, pravritti marg is based on sex life. As stated in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Prahlad Maharaj, Yan maitunadi grihamedhi sukam hi tuccham. A householder who is too much addicted to pravritti marg is actually called a grihamedhi, not a grihastha. Although the grihastha desires sense gratification, one acts according to Vedic instructions. The grihamedhi, however, who is interested only in sense gratification, does not follow any Vedic instruction. The grihamedhi engages him or herself as an advocate of sex life and also allows one's sons and daughters to also engage in sex and to be deprived of any glorious end in life. A grihastha enjoys sex life in this life as well as in the next, but the grihamedhi does not know what the next life is about because he or she is simply interested in sex in this life. On the whole, when one is too much inclined toward sex, one does not care for transcendental spiritual life. In this age of Kali especially, no one is interested in spiritual advancement. Even though it is sometimes found that one may be interested in spiritual advancement, he or she is most likely to accept a bogus method of spiritual life, being misguided by so many pretenders. One who takes sex life to be supreme finds action in Krishna consciousness confusing. Every husband is certainly a great hero to his wife. In other words, if a woman loves a man, that man appears very beautiful and magnanimous. Unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his or her whole life to another. The husband is considered very magnanimous because he gives as many children to the wife as she likes. Every woman is fond of children. Therefore, any husband who can please his wife by sex and give her children is considered very magnanimous. Not only does the husband become magnanimous by begetting children, but by giving his wife ornaments, nice food and dresses, the husband keeps the wife completely under submission. Such a satisfied wife will never give up the company of her husband. A woman is generally very much attracted by a man's long arms. A serpent's body is round, and it becomes narrower and thinner at the end. The beautiful arms of a man appear to a woman just like serpents, and she very much desires to be embraced by such arms. The word anatha varga is very significant. Natha means husband, and means without. A young woman who has no husband is called anatha, meaning one who is not protected. As soon as a woman attains the age of puberty, immediately she becomes very much agitated by sexual desire. It is therefore the duty of the father to get his daughter married before she attains puberty. Otherwise, she will be very much mortified by not having a husband. Anyone who satisfies her desire for sex at that age becomes a great object of satisfaction. It is a psychological fact that when a woman at the age of puberty meets a man and that man satisfies her sexually, she will love that man for the rest of her life, regardless who he is. Thus, so-called love within this material world is nothing but sexual satisfaction. Recorded November 14, 2023 by Nirantara Dasa. All glories to the ISKCON founder, Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.
Om Tat Sat.